Welcome to the Nature Reliance Podcast, where we explore the history and practical experience of the great outdoors and discover new ways to connect with nature. I'm Craig Cottle, your guide through the fascinating world of natural living and survival skills through experiential education and interviews. Today's episode is brought to you by the Nature Reliance School Online Membership, an immersive online learning experience designed for outdoor enthusiasts just like you. Are you passionate about the outdoors? Do you crave more knowledge about disaster readiness, wilderness survival, bushcraft, tracking, and nature awareness? If so, the Nature Reliance School Online Membership is your gateway to a community of like-minded individuals, all dedicated to learning and sharing essential outdoor skills. With the Nature Reliance School Online Membership, you get exclusive access to a wealth of resources, including expert-led tutorials, interactive webinars, and a library of engaging courses, downloadable books, and documents. Whether you're a beginner or an experienced outdoorsman, there's always something new to learn. So don't wait. Click on the link below to join the Nature Reliance School Online Membership today. Embrace the wilderness, enhance your skills, and become part of a community that values nature as much as you do. Now, let's dive into today's episode.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. I'm talking to you. You like this podcast, don't you? And you're thinking about doing a podcast yourself. Let me tell you how easy it is to do this with Anchor. First off, the money's right. It's free. Zero cost. Secondly, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will then distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and many more. Bonus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
And welcome to part two as Craig continues to tell us the story of his canoeing trip that changed his life.
We got in, I'm in the front, he's in the back, and we're going to hit that first rapid, and there's a huge boulder right in the middle of this rapid, and we're going to hit it on the left side. I mean, literally, we had to come out of the eddy that we had camped by, and we had camped right next to this rapid all night long. We were right next to it and looked at it, but we had not gone downstream of it and looked back at it. Stupid mistake. We hit the rapid. As soon as we got out of the eddy and the water started flowing heavy, the front of the boat where I was hit square right into the big boulder that I was talking to. I smacked the rock, and I've done this several times at this point, smacked the rock to push off, and the boat just simply did not move. It was stuck. Square going straight into the rock. I didn't know what was going on, but what was happening was the front of the boat was starting to go down into the river. What ended up happening, so much water pushed into the back of this boat and him, that the next thing I know, literally, he goes flying over my head. Again, I'm in the front of the canoe, he's in the back. And the reason he went flying over my head is because the water had wedged this canoe onto this rock and literally folded the canoe in half, literally broke it. And I mean, it went from a canoe to a sharp V of a canoe. He went flying over, and it was pushing the back of the canoe so hard that it pushed him past that rock and past the hydraulic. The hydraulic is where the water is sitting there churning. It threw him down the river, and then the boat just completely turned upside down, and it sucked me down into the hydraulic. If you're not familiar, for those that are listening, if you're not familiar with a hydraulic, when water turns over a rapid, it basically sits there and churns. And so there's a lot of times where logs will get stuck up in there, and they might stay in there for weeks, if not a whole season. It sucked me down to the bottom of that hydraulic. And there I was in this hydraulic getting thrown around. I didn't have any protective gear on except my flotation device, which is one thing that is good. We always wore our PFDs. We always wore our flotation devices. I should have been wearing a helmet, but I didn't. That was another piece of equipment that I should have carried with me for sure. But there I was in the bottom of this hydraulic. I'll never forget realizing that I was not going to come out of it. I was trying to get out of it, but I just kept getting churned back up underneath of it. I still have this memory today of thinking about my daughter, realizing that I was in the midst of getting ready to drown and die. And I remember giving up because I realized I was dead. Okay. In my mind, I was dead. And because I'd sucked in a lot of water, I wasn't breathing. I was getting hit by logs and I was getting thrown on the rocks and all this stuff. It's, you know, all this probably took just a few seconds, I'm sure. But it seemed like my life just ended in front of me. And I just gave up. I remember giving up and quit trying to fight. I gave up. And when I did, I relaxed. And whatever happened, as I've said a million times, God's hand on me or just the river decided to give me up, whatever way you want to look at it. I have my own opinions, but it threw me out. It kind of pushed me out and I floated to the top. And when I floated to the top, whatever it was, I woke up. I'm not saying I died. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying I was either out of it, blacked out, unconscious, or whatever it was that was going on. And when I hit the top of the river, I woke up. And so I was able to still full water. I mean, I couldn't breathe. Paddled over to the side of the river and literally stood up on the side of the river and threw myself down on another rock on my chest to try to expel the water out of my chest. And it worked. It was kind of like I was giving my, you know, saving myself as a lifeguard, basically, right? I did that enough to where I could start breathing again. And again, thinking the whole time I was just dead. I don't know, man. It's just, there's so many things. And I wish I could go back and watch it and see how long this took. It seemed like minutes. I'm sure it was maybe a minute or two tops, maybe a minute. All of what I just described happened. I can't see me being full of water for very long and actually living, right?
Right.
I just can't. So it must have been less than a minute that everything that I just described happened. It seemed like forever. And so I was sitting there coughing. I remember coughing up water like you see in the movies where, you know, somebody save somebody from drowning, they cough up all this water. That was happening. I'm looking at that coming out of my mouth and look across and see the guy that I'm with. He was on the other side of the river and was out sitting on the river and just had his, I could see him now, had his head in his hands, just sitting there like, what the heck just happened kind of thing. And so there we are.
All right. So couple questions.
Yeah, man.
And you may not know the answers to some of these. How deep would you guesstimate that to be?
Man, that is a tough question. I would guess right there where I was stuck in the hydraulic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I would hate to guess that. Maybe 8 or 9 feet, nothing extreme. It was, you know, what causes those rapids to happen is that there's rocks or a ledge or something, and then water pours off of it. And then just downstream of that, there's more rocks that start rising to the top. And that's why water gets churned in there. So it couldn't have been too deep in that particular spot.
A lot of people have done this. I've done it 4 or 5 times, went up to the upper Gali in the New River doing the whitewater rafting. We get below one of those and he says, hey, do y'all want to flip the boat? And of course we said, yes, we were basically below all the danger. So we paddle back into the rapid, which captures the front of the boat. The very second, and I do mean a second or less, soon as that water hit the front of the boat, it sucked that boat down and flipped every one of us in a heartbeat. It is that severe. And so I can only imagine you don't have time to think, do you? I mean, it just happens in a snap of the fingers.
Yeah, it did. It was that quick, man.
Okay, so here's the next question. You get down into this thing. What should you have done to get out of it? Have you all went through that, talked through it, if you got caught into a bad position on how to get out from the churning of the water?
When I was stuck in the hydraulic or we were still in the boat?
When you were in the water.
There's no answer to that. I've talked to a lot of people about that hydraulic, and there's no good answer other than if you can find some sort of hold to push off with your legs. I remember trying to swim out with my arms and even with my legs, man, it's almost an impossibility. And that's why, I mean, there's times where this stuff happens and bodies get hung up in these hydraulics and they don't come out for days. That's where I was in the middle of that. That's why I just give credit to credit to the divine. And I don't try to, you know, I don't, when I share stories, particularly this one, I've got a lot of stories like this that make me have a belief system that I do. I try not to force that on people, but I'm just telling you, typically the result of this situation is that I was dead. I was drowned, and they were not going to get my body out for days, if not a couple of weeks. You know, if something happened and I didn't get stuck there, and I'm sitting here on this podcast and talking to you, and I wrote a book and and I teach survival because of this. This is one of the stories that made me do all of that. I don't think there's a way to get out of it, Tracy. I really don't. I don't know what it would be. Nobody's giving me a good answer for that.
Well, the only thing that I can remember doing the Upper Golly was our guides kept telling us, if you get thrown out, if you find yourself in a bad position underneath the water, put your feet against something and just push for everything that you have in you. He said, you know, that's about all you can do. There's too much pressure, too much water, too much flow, and you don't have enough strength to fight through that.
Just the upper portion of the water coming through this rapid is what broke that canoe in half. I just don't know that I could have pushed my way out of it. But again, I'm out, so I'm very thankful, very, very thankful.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey guys and gals, a quick break in our episode to talk about a game changer in outdoor cooking, the Fire Maple Backpacking and Camping Stove System. Whether you're hiking, fishing, or even prepping for emergencies, this portable pot and jet burner is a must-have in your gear. Best part? It's nearly half the price of a comparable JetBoil stove system. Thanks to its leading heat exchange technology, you'll experience reduced boiling times by up to 30% compared to traditional stoves, even in windy conditions. That means more time enjoying the outdoors and less time cooking. Are you ready to upgrade your outdoor cooking game? Click the link in the description now to grab yours. Trust me, your outdoor adventures will never be the same.
Yeah, and we are too. So you get through this, you get up on the land, and you are expelling the water from your lungs. You capture your breath back. Tell us what goes through your head.
Well, first off, I yelled at my buddy, and we couldn't hear each other. He's yelling at me, and I'm yelling at him, and the rapids are so rough that we cannot hear each other. This is another reason I think it seems silly, but one of the reasons that we've done a lot of hand signals and stuff like that, and even some survival classes, is because hand signals is what allowed us to communicate in a way that we could get done what we needed to get done. And so we were able to communicate. What ended up happening, the boat was stuck there for just a short while, and then it passed on down. It flowed past us right in front of us in the river. Now, go back to what I said earlier. Remember, all of our gear is tied into the boat. This sort of thing, dumping a boat, has happened numerous times to us. It's no big deal. It's going to be down in an eddy somewhere down the river in a little bit. We're going to get in there and get it, pull it out, and we're going to be good to go. Okay? This is what I was thinking.
Right.
We realized at that point, obviously, we're not going to be able to paddle out. He was an incredibly good swimmer. He was on the swim team. I was not and still am not a good swimmer. I can adequately swim. I'm much better now because Lily's helped me with that. But back then, dog paddling was about all I had. Now, that's pretty stupid, too, to spend that much time paddling and not be able to swim very well. But it had served me up to that point. We went down the river. He swam over to me in a pool where the water wasn't moving that heavy because of this canoe at this point was out of sight. We didn't even know where it was. It was moving so fast down the river. We got together, checked on each other. Neither one of us were broke. Neither one of us were bleeding. So our next thing that we needed to do was go down there, and we were going to get our stuff out of the boat. Now, my dry bag was a backpack dry bag. So I could literally, when we needed to portage and stuff, I would literally take my dry bag out of the canoe and put it on my shoulders and then portage the canoe and move on. Mm-hmm. What we also knew, based upon what I had said earlier, is we also knew that the side of the river that I was on where he swam to is the side of the river that we needed to be on to hike out. We knew that we could go straight up from the river, and the shelter we trace paralleled the river there. And it's what Tracy taught me, and then we wrote in the book, is but hand railing basically, or have a catch feature, knowing that in a certain particular area, there's something there that's going to stop you. And that trail, we knew if we walked straight up the hill from the river, that we would run and step onto the shelter we trace. But what we wanted to do was get our gear, because my keys to get into the truck were in my dry bag in the middle of the canoe, tied into it. Think about another big rock in the middle of a very wide portion of the river, but there was a lot of water that was being pushed in and funneled that direction, and the canoe was literally a V on that rock, meaning the canoe was stuck in the middle of the river. And all we had on us was literally the clothes that we had on us when we dumped in our flotation devices.
Could you all see your gear still tied to the canoe in the middle?
Still tied to the canoe in the middle. Still everything. And we looked at it. We debated on whether we could get in the river and float up to it. I mean, this is how stupid we are. We discussed it, and I told him, no, you're not getting back in that river. I refuse to let him get back in the river. He had it in his mind. He was kind of a daredevil of sorts. He almost got me killed multiple times, but he's like, I think I can get in the river and I'll float. And when I get up to the canoe, I'll just grab hold of it and climb in and throw the gear over to you. And I'm like, no, dude, you're not doing that. I was absolutely scared to death of the river at that point. In my mind, the river was after us that day, and we weren't going to be able to escape it. We kind of got in a little bit of a disagreement over it, and he agreed with me that it was probably a stupid idea eventually. But what we had to do was we had to hike out. Again, I did not have anything on me other than my vest, and I had a really good whitewater vest with a couple of pockets on it. I didn't have anything in those pockets. Now when I go, even if it's in the middle of the summer, I've got fire starting material and a knife in that vest on me. I didn't have it then. If you can believe that, it's crazy. Craig Cottle did not have a knife on me. And what I was always afraid of was getting hung up in a rapid or something, a knife coming out stabbing me. So I didn't carry a knife on me on the river. Stupid mistake. I should have come up with a better solution. And I have now. You know, I carry a blade with me on the vest. That's a big change. I carry fire starting material. I carry a ferrule rod. I carry a lighter in a protective case, and I carry fast fires with me inside my vest whenever I get on the water now paddling. Here's what we figured out is that let's hike up. We were already shaking to the point of getting mildly I didn't know what it was then, but now I understand is mild hypothermia to the point where I could not stop shaking. And I said, man, let's just get on the trail and run it. Because again, this is when I was much younger and I ran a lot. Let's just run the trail and get warmed up. And that's exactly what we did. We got on the trail and started running back to Bee Rock Campground, which I can't remember how far it is from where this particular event. I need a map because I know exactly where that rock is. I need to look it up and see how far this is. He and I started running. We did warm up and we're still soaking wet, still had our PFDs on, got to the truck. And believe it or not, it was not until then that I realized the keys were in the dry bag in the middle of the river.
Oh, wow.
And then I did not have a way to get into my truck. Now, there were keys to the truck under the floor mat in the truck, but I had no way of getting into it. So we debated, you know, this is long before any cell phones, and the weather had been such that everything down at Bee Rock was wet. There was not going to be anybody camping, so we couldn't get any help from anybody. We waited. Nobody ever came. We were doing jumping jacks and everything, just trying to stay warm. And we finally made the decision to break into my truck. Now, this is somewhat comical. Man, it's tough breaking into a car.
When you're not an expert of it.
I mean, if you're good, I guess you are good. But, man, we were not good at breaking into cars. I had picked up a bunch of sticks. We had picked up rocks and tried to throw them through the windows. Could not break it. What we eventually did is I had a little camper top on the back of my truck. I got in the back of it. I took out I had a sliding rear door in the back for the truck and the camper. And I was actually we took a big log, like a battering ram, like, you know, busting into a fort, and actually set up this where he was outside and I was in guiding it and he was shoving it. And we shoved that through that sliding rear glass and broke it, just busted it wide open through glass everywhere. And I was able to climb through the glass, go through that little hole, get everything unlocked and get us both in there. And we got in the truck to start heading home.
Well, I'm just trying to process everything that you went through.
It's a crazy story, isn't it? So far, I've got a couple other things that are kind of funny.
Well, I've got a few questions, but
yeah, go for it.
Skillet.
Okay, that's one of the funny stories.
Okay.
So let me tell you the other half of this. So we went on back down, or we went on home. You know, just epic story for the future, right? One of the things that was inside my dry bag is my pistol that I carried everywhere at that time. We had a lot of equipment that was inside of those dry bags. He had a dry bag, I had a dry bag, and that was all in the middle of the river. So what we did is we went home. His father-in-law was a state trooper, Kentucky state trooper. And his father-in-law had the awfulest bunch of equipment you ever seen. Probably the kind of stuff that you all have in your search and rescue truck. That's what he had. I mean, he had it all. We thought he was king daddy, man. He had all the ropes and the beaners and the pulley systems and all that. And so we determined we're going to go down there. We got a grappling hook. We were going to hook to the canoe, pull it off the rock. We were going to set up a big winch system and pull it back off the rock, get our stuff out, and then we were going to come back home the next day. Okay. Right. So when we get down there to the spot, hike back in there, the canoe was gone. There was nothing there at all. And we had walked back the whole section of the river on the way back looking in case it had come unlodged from the rock and didn't see anything. At some point in time, the canoe had come unhinged from that rock and had went on down the river, and I don't know where it went at that point. So we didn't have anything to pull out. So we went back home and thought, well, we've lost it all. It's gone. We're never going to get any of that stuff back. And that included a pistol that was pretty important to me and our wallets, you know, that simple stuff really. And, you know, as far as wallets and what little bit of money we had as young men, right? So we told his father-in-law, and his father-in-law said, well, we're going to get that stuff back. We drove down there. I'll never forget getting in a state trooper's car, and he drove at least 5,000 miles an hour back down there. It scared me to death. First time I'd ever ridden in a car with a state trooper. Good gravy, man. Scared me to death. We went driving around that little community, okay, downstream of B-Rock Campground. We were driving around those little communities and saw the boat in the backyard of somebody's house. We went up to the door, talked to the guy, and his dad did, in his state trooper uniform. With a little bit of Kentucky state trooper encouragement, this gentleman said that when he got it, all he found was the canoe, that there was nothing else in it. I kept saying the canoe was broke. It actually wasn't split in half. It was just folded in half. Mm-hmm. The aluminum stays and the bars were what was folded. The actual fiberglass or whatever those things are made out of. Plastic, I don't know what they're made out of, those Coleman canoes from that old. It could be reformed, and that's what his intent was. He was going to take the canoe, reform it. I don't know, this state trooper, he had good interrogation skills. He determined that the guy was telling the truth. Don't know how. I mean, just talking to him and being able to read people, I'm sure. He determined he was telling the truth, that all he found was a canoe, that everything else was still down there. He didn't find anything else. So he told him, listen, you need to tell the people that's got all the other stuff that we're coming, and we're coming after them, and we're going to find them, and we're going to get it back. So they can either call me and give it back to us, or we're going to find it and they're going to go to jail. And, you know, and only the way a state trooper can, right?
Right.
And I'm telling you what, man, we got back. And within 2 hours, we got a phone call, and this guy had all of our stuff in his building behind his house, all of it. And he had all of our clothes, my pistol, his pistol, everything else was laid out drying in his garage.
Was it the same guy that you talked to originally?
No, it was somebody totally different.
Different. Okay.
This guy knew, the guy that had the boat knew who had the stuff.
I see.
And he called him. And I mean, I'm just telling, I don't know how, I'm trying to say it nicely, but the way this state trooper encouraged this gentleman, it was really clear that there was hell to pay if we didn't get that stuff back. Now, to go back to your original question, everything was there but the skillet. Everything. So I went back down to the river, and we walked up and down both sides of the river, and I found my wife's skillet on the side of the river. I'm not even joking, man. Dude, it was laying right on the side of the river. Now, that skillet was, I never found the grill. That skillet was not in a dry bag, because remember, we'd used it to cook, so it had a lot of oil and stuff in it. So I had basically tied it into the boat, just separate from everything else. So I don't know when he, whoever got to the boat, they just grabbed the skillet and just threw it off to the side of the bank, I guess, wherever they found it. And that's where I found it, on the side of the river, man.
Saved your marriage.
Exactly, dude. How funny is that? Yeah. Still have that skillet too, man. Still got it. It's in the cabinet right now.
Oh, heck yeah. I'd be putting it in my casket whenever I'm left.
No joke, man. It's crazy.
All right. A couple questions for you. We always do in our classes kind of a lessons learned type deal. We've talked about it before in other podcasts. So I'd like to do that with you. But before you get into that, I got a couple questions for you. Did you all ever go back and talk to the gentleman who ran the put in and pass this story on to him?
No, never did. He sees so many, I don't know if he'd even remember the situation, but he probably, if we'd gone back with that week, maybe, yeah. We did not.
I think that would have been pretty interesting. Sit down and talk to him and say, you know, hey, we should have listened to you.
Yeah, exactly. I wish we would have, because he was right. He was dead on. We should have not been doing what he's doing. And I should have went down there and encouraged him. It's just young and stupid. So I didn't. I would today.
Sure. Yeah. You talk in our class, and I'll let you explain this. You say if you're ever in a situation and you notice three things that do not go right or do not go as planned, that you should step back and evaluate.
Right.
All right. Do you want to explain that to our listeners real quick? And then I've got a question.
It's just three things. If three things stand outside of the norm, you should either stop immediately what you're doing or assess the situation as best you can. Okay. In this particular case, there was a whole lot more than three. Number one, the storm. It was raining. Number two, we didn't have clothes and we were cold. Number three, we didn't take the time to portage and scout this rapid out. That's three. There's multiple. You all listen to the story can see probably a lot more. We didn't. We just blew that off. And it's one of the reasons that I teach the way that I teach. And I'm so thankful that you and I get the opportunity to share this information, is because in the middle of situations like that, it's hard to think critically because you're stressed or whatever. And it's one of the things that I share with people to help them know, hey, stop what you're doing. Stop is another part of this. Stop, think, observe, plan. Actively stay alive, assess the situation, and recognize, man, we shouldn't be doing this. We should have never gone on. I'm bouncing around. With what I know now, what I understand, we would have never gone on that river that day. There were three things that stood out already about that trip that should have stopped us from going. And we just blew all that off. And it's so easy to do. And I wrote this in my first book, and I say it all the time. If at any point in time, you look at your buddy and go, man, we're stupid for doing this. We must be crazy. Then you should stop what you're doing. That doesn't mean that you don't go out. It just means if you are saying that, then that means that your mind is telling you, your mind has assessed the situation and knows that it's dangerous. And you should listen to your mind telling you that and assess it and come up with solutions and contingency plans if something goes wrong. Because if you go, yeah, like he did, F it, let's run it, then that's how people die. And you should utilize that critical thinking skills of three in particular to help you get past that, I think.
Yeah, I love that. If three things go wrong or if three things don't go as planned, you need to step back, slow down, and evaluate everything. I love that. I love that. All right, let's go through, and I'm sure there's plenty of them here. Work back through this and tell us the lessons that you learned from this and that you implored going forward.
There's a bunch, obviously, and we could probably talk for another hour on that, but I wanted to break it down into three things. And I tried to point this out as we were going on. First is understand the difference between cockiness and confidence. Hopefully you can gather from listening to this podcast how cockiness nearly got us killed. The cockiness got us on the river to begin with. The cockiness got us into that rapid that nearly killed us. Think about the cockiness of tying everything to the boat. You know, we shouldn't have done that. I mean, think about it. If we had not tied the stuff to the boat when it got hung up on the rock, the stuff would have been down the river. We would have put warm clothes on and we would have been just fine. It would have just been another day out in the woods. It was just one of those, decisions that, fortunately I'm here. We have the good fortune of being able to train people so you can learn from my mistakes. So again, the first one being cockiness versus confidence. You should have confidence. And I try to tell people this all the time. This doesn't mean that you shouldn't do dangerous things. I'm not saying you can't do dangerous things. For example, I know Tracy, he goes over cliffs all the time that if he did not do what he was supposed to do, he would fall and die. Right. But there's safety measures you put in place. No matter what you're going to do that's dangerous, you've got to take these necessary safety measures so you can still, if you're the type of person that wants to be, quote unquote, an adrenaline junkie or live life on the edge or whatever, you should still take the necessary planning and precautions to stay safe so that it, well, guess what? You can go back and do it again. We threw a bunch of those safety precautions off because of cockiness. And the way we could have been confident was have better planning, have better clothes. That's why we teach mindset, skills, tactics, and gear. It's all about mindset, skills, and tactics, and gear. And this, and again, is one of those stories that made me teach the way that I do and write the things that I do, because it's just all those things are important. And our mindset was terrible. Our skills were okay. The tactics, us communicating and working together, that was spot on. I'm just telling you, we were good paddlers. And the gear was terrible. Our gear was terrible. Our gear setup, what we had on our bodies was terrible. And so, yeah, we were cocky. Secondly, I think we need to do a whole lot of scenarios and contingency planning on whatever we're going to do. And that means talking things out. My daughter and I went hiking last week. For those that listen, I think most people that listen to us regular read my stuff know that my daughter's a type 1 diabetic. So just going out in the woods for a day hike is basically a dangerous activity. But that doesn't mean that we don't do it. We've got to plan it. You know, if so, when she and I take the opportunity to go hiking together, we make sure we have mindset, skills, tactics, gear. We actually talk about what happens if she goes low. We talk about what happens if something happens to me and I die or I break a leg or something. She has to find her way out on her own. And I think that kind of stuff is invaluable, is discussing scenarios like that and planning so that you don't just assume everything's going to be perfect, because a lot of times things aren't perfect and things happen. And so we need to have plans to handle situations when they don't go the way that we expect them to.
The scenario training, I think, is critical. You and I were really introduced to this, or at least I was, I should say, whenever we went down and took the training down at Ironside Defense out of London, Kentucky, Rodney Van Zandt, a good friend of ours. And once we got through running our guns and we'd be sitting around talking stuff, a lot of times he would come up and say, "Hey, if this situation occurred, what are you going to do?" Remember him doing that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it makes you think. If you can work through a lot of different scenarios, if that scenario materializes or if something similar develops, you don't have to waste your time trying to think and analyze everything. You just know what to do. I'm a volunteer firefighter here, and one thing that our family does from time to time is we sit down and we talk about a fire in the house. What window are you going to go out? What door are you going to go out, and where we're going to meet? So that if something does happen, you just do it and you don't have to think. You get overwhelmed and your brain kind of shuts down in those tight situations. And if you have worked through those scenarios, you just automatically go into the reaction mode and just do it. So I can't emphasize enough the scenario training that Craig just got through talking about in whatever you're doing is just critical, critical training and planning.
Hey, dude, do you remember off the top of your head? Well, I'll tell you what, if you don't care, well, I'll just ask you this first. You and I did a podcast on what the difference between training or practicing training and what else did we call it? Remember that podcast?
Well, that was one of the very first ones we did.
I tell you what, when I start talking about this next point, do you care to look it up?
Yes, I'll look it up.
Because here's what we're talking about, guys, and Tracy will find this up while I'm talking. It's one of those, this podcast, and this is one of the things we really appreciate everybody sharing our podcast. Please do give us a 5-star review and everything on the stuff that you really like. Tell other people about it, because we just need you to do that. But this podcast Tracy's going to find for us and tell us about, there's a big difference between just practicing and training. and I can't remember these other words that Tracy came up. He's the one that put these notes together for this class. It's fantastic. Scenario training is part of that. Contingency planning is part of that. You know, I've said it, and I said it in that first book. You know, with Special Forces, I was talking to somebody I can't talk about. But anyway, I was talking to him last week about an event, and they planned for that event for 2 weeks before they did it. And they knew that this event was only going to take about 15 minutes, and they planned for that event for 2 weeks. This is a military person, big Army kind of guy, SF kind of guy, and Special Forces kind of guy. And if people that are what I would consider the best of the best of doing very difficult things under hard circumstances plan for a 15-minute operation for 2 weeks, I think it is worthy of our consideration to spend more time planning on a near-death possibility experience on a river. And I think that is a good example for us, and I think we should spend plenty of time doing that. Did you find that thing, dude?
Yeah, it's podcast number two. It's how to train.
Was that early?
I had to go way back. How to prepare so you don't die. And it goes through all that training versus learning and all the steps through there.
I think it's worthy of your time to go back and listen to it too. All right. And number three, Trace, I think this is, thanks for asking this question the way you did, is what we typically refer to as the law of threes being a foundational understanding of how to handle yourself in survival. And a lot of people go, 3 minutes, really, blood flow and oxygen flow. You've got to take care of that first. Well, if there's ever a time, and this is where 3 minutes comes into play, because most people, when they hear me talk about that, all they think about is tourniquets. They always go to tourniquets.
Sure.
And yeah, that's important. But that's people that spend all their times in the wood doing bushcraft and using axes and knives. And that is very important. No doubt about it. However, if you're going to do anything around water, then you really need to consider planning and contingency planning for not being able to breathe and what happens. And fortunately, I had a couple of instances, not nearly as severe as what happened in this story, where I took in more water than I wanted to. And I used the method of throwing myself down on the side of the river to expel water out of my lungs. I had that in the back of my mind all the time because I'd used it before, and almost said his name. And the fellow that I was with had used it before. And so when I popped out and couldn't breathe, I had the mindset, due to exactly what Tracy was just talking about, previous training and being prepared, of knowing what I needed to do. And so that's what I did. That's all I had in my mind. And I had no idea what the law of threes was back then. I just knew that that was high priority. And so I had planning and training for that he and I had gone through. And so that was very beneficial at that time. It saved my life, literally saved my life.
Yeah, I think one of the things that whenever we go through those laws of three is that if you're out, say, in a group hiking or something and someone goes down, you might be the one responsible for providing that oxygen to them.
Yeah.
Right. So it may not be you doing it. You self-rescued yourself or self-administered to yourself, but most of the time, person is going to be passed out, and you're going to be responsible for that, and you need to prepare yourself to do that if you're going to be out in a group.
I think I sent you that message I got the other day, didn't I, Tracy? The guy that was in the gorge, and somebody's getting carried out on their back. Did I send that to you?
You did not.
Okay, I thought I did. Anyway, this guy sent me a message, and he was really concerned, because he had went hiking in the Red River Gorge, and on his way back, somebody was carrying another person out, and the person they were carrying out had stopped while he could see them several times and had thrown up and was possibly.
Oh, yes. Yes, you did. You did.
And obviously they had been out drinking in the gorge, doing silly stuff. Well, I'll just call it what it is. It's just doing idiotic stuff. Just getting totally drunk, staying out in the gorge somewhere. Just stupid. That's how people die. He wrote me and said, what should I do? What kind of training should I do? You know, and my first recommendation to everybody, if you do not have basic fundamental Red Cross first aid training, then fix yourself. Get at least that, you all. And then once you get that, then you can build upon it. If you want to go as far as getting woofer training or something, Tracy's got, is it woofer that you've got?
Yes.
I don't know that the average ordinary person needs to go that far, but it sure wouldn't hurt. You know, that's what somebody like Tracy Search and Rescue's got. But you need to have some fundamental training to handle somebody that maybe has an allergic reaction, gets water in their lungs on a canoe trip, all these simple things so that you can be able to help instead of just standing there looking at them and watching them die. You don't want to do that.
Right. Yeah. Basic first aid. And what's the one that's been real popular now? Stop the Bleed.
Stop the Bleed. I'm a big fan of Stop the Bleed, man.
If you're out camping and, you know, hatchets and axes and knives and you're 4, 5, 6, 8 miles from anywhere, that is a great class to have. You need to find, and they're free. They're free all over the place now. There's no excuse not taking it.
In that river, me getting my leg hung up in the river and breaking my femur and it cutting my femoral artery or something. That's not that far out of the scope of possibility. Doing something like that.
No, not at all.
And if I didn't have a tourniquet, I didn't know what a tourniquet was, man, back then. And that's just stupid. And Stop the Bleed training is that step above first aid training. And I could have been better prepared. Definitely. There's no excuse for it now. As Tracy said, that stuff's free, man. Get that stuff. Get it done.
You got to prepare. Craig, anything else you want to add to this?
The only thing I would add in, and Tracy and I talk about this all the time, is I've shared some major mistakes that I've made here. I don't have a problem sharing those with you all, anybody for that matter. I've never pretended to be one that knows everything. And I think it's an opportunity for you to learn from my mistakes so that you don't have to make them. But also, because I'm Craig Cottle, author, director of Nature Alliance School, podcaster, writer, or whatever, and am admitting that I make mistakes and I learn from them, take that as a lesson as best you can. We should all be doing that. We should all be okay with the fact that sometimes we don't do everything right and we shouldn't beat ourselves down for it. We should absolutely learn from it. And if you have the opportunity to teach or mentor others, then take the time to do exactly that. Help them learn from your mistakes. The beautiful thing is, by me sharing my mistakes, hopefully you get to go out canoeing, you take the necessary precautions, and you get to go canoeing again and again and again, or you get to go bushcrafting or whatever again and again and again. Again, go back and listen to podcast number 2, talking about how to prepare yourself, but at the very least, know that mistakes are going to happen and learn from them. Don't let them beat you down. That would be the only other thing I would add in.
Yeah, most of our classes we throw out. Things that you should do and things that doesn't work. And we've figured those out by us doing them, and they've failing, not working, just didn't work out the way we planned. So, and we try to pass all that along to everyone else. And the great thing about coming to class is all the people that's in class, then they start talking. Yeah, I tried this. I did that. I had this one time and it just didn't work. And kind of goes to our closing statement, you know, come on, join in. Let's all learn together. And that works out quite well. Well, let's close this out. Craig, we thank you very, very much for taking the time and going in detail in a life event that literally changed your life, didn't it? Put you on the,
it did.
One of the events that put you on the path to doing what you're doing now, training and teaching and helping others. And we greatly appreciate that. We appreciate everyone tuning in and listening to us. If you get time, check out our sponsors, Titan Survival, ExoTact, Outdoor Core, and more are coming online all the time. You'll be able to check out our website at naturealliance.org, get a list of all those sponsors, and we encourage you to go and buy from them. Help them out, help yourself out, and help us out. Until next time, as always, come on, join in, and let's learn together.
And that wraps up another fantastic episode of the Nature Alliance podcast. I hope today's journey has inspired you to explore and connect with the natural world in new and exciting ways. Before I say goodbye, remember to check out the Nature Alliance School online membership. If today's episode sparked your interest in wilderness skills and outdoor adventures, this online community is the perfect place for you to start or continue your journey. You can currently sign up for a year for only $99 and get 2 months for free. Click the link below to discover a world of expert-led courses, engaging content, and a vibrant community eager to share their knowledge and experiences. Whether you're starting your outdoor journey or looking to deepen your existing skills, the Nature Reliant School online membership is here to guide you. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe for more adventures and share this podcast with your fellow nature enthusiasts. Until next time, come on, join in. Let's learn together.